Welcome to the Neojatron podcast. This is Isaac. This is episode 11. In this episode, Jess and I discuss the internal external martial art of eight drunken immortals. And when I did that with Bruce, we talk about chapter 4 of the Energy Gates book. We discuss what the Energy Gates are and how you feel them. Also, Jess has released his third Bagua training session on our Patreon, so if you're interested in checking that out, you should take a look. Links on the description there. Again, sorry about the audio. These are, you know, early episodes of doing it online. Audio, we're still working out the kinks, so you know, it's a little rough, but we've gotten better, and the future episodes should be higher quality. Thanks. Okay, hope everyone's doing well, and enjoy the episode. Take care.
Welcome back. Moving forward through the opening energy gates of your body forward here, we're talking about the biography of the author. At this point in Taiwan, he explored the half-internal, half-external kung fu styles of the Eight Drunken Immortals, Northern Praying Mantis, Fujian White Train, Northern Monkey, and Wing Chun. So, you know, some of the other books talk about these martial arts, some of the people he visited, some of them he learned from, some of the schools he studied with. But from what I can tell on this list, the only one he ever taught was the Eight Drunken Immortals that you guys did in Fairfax. Did you ever see anything about the Northern Praying Mantis or Fujian White Train when you guys were training?
He never taught any of it. He couple times demonstrated some of the like white crane, how mostly in respect to how it was different from Tai Chi, you know, show how how an external form would do it versus a, you know, Tai Chi. We did do the Eight Drunken Immortals for about a year, way back in, I guess that was probably, I'll say 94 or something like that.
Nice. In terms of Eight Drunken Immortals, I was looking through Power of Internal Martial Arts, where he talks a little bit about that. He says, "One afternoon in a Taipei park, I saw a group of eight people doing an unusual martial art under a tree. The group was led by an old man who moved like a teenager. I watched for a while, and pretty soon the teacher and I got into a conversation. He was surprised that I could speak Chinese and had a love of Taoism. He said his method was called Eight Drunken Immortals and that it was part of a Taoist lineage, not part of the Shaolin method. He asked if I would like to learn." So it sounds like he learned this sort of randomly in the park, just managed to stumble across a group and get into Eight Drunken Immortals.
Yep. That's what it sounded like. I mean, he, you know, when we did it, it was primarily technique based. It didn't have a lot of forms. So it was kind of, here's a feeling of, you know, a type of application or whatever, you know, like a happy drunk or a lost drunk or a drunk that wants to give you something. And then that kind of carry into a movement, right? And you sort of do a particular application, but it wasn't like, this is the movement. And then you tried to, it was more like, this is the sort of way you move, you know, this is how you're moving. And then here's an application that can come from that type of motion. So it was a lot of,
there wasn't any extended forms.
There were just,
it was like feelings you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. It was more like he'd slap you in the head. And then that was, you know, that's how you get the technique. it was the only time that we really did any sort of free sparring stuff. We would all stumble around the room doing the like drunken kind of get it going thing. And then you would like roll into somebody and then that would start like kind of a push hands thing with them a little bit. And then, you know, that could carry up. And then, you know, by the end of it, you know, you'd be rolling around on the ground with, you know, doing ground fighting stuff with one guy and then sort of bounce off of him and then fight somebody else for a minute. So that was kind of fun.
So could you describe that opening movement that you would do to sort of get the energy going? Like,
so the first thing was sort of, if you took like a basic standing posture, like, you know, the energy gauge thing, you were with one or both hands stirring below your feet, and then you would bring the as you put it, the immortal elixir up from the ground, and you would drink it from, you know, an imaginary glass, and there were different
over your head. If you left your hands,
yeah, up above your head and then down. So the first one was, you imagined it like a really long flute, like a English, you know, one of those really long things with the ball on the bottom. So you had to hold it with both hands and tilt it way back, right? So like, and then that thing, as it hit your foot, that would be the bounce back up and you start to move. So it was kind of like a very external way of getting your energy to go down to your feet, up to your head, and down to your feet, and up to your head, until that got your body moving. So
not the refined way of carefully moving your awareness inch by inch through your body, but just more of a sloshing feeling of bouncing.
Yeah. It was a lot of this sort of do a physical movement that mimicked an energetic thing, and then kind of let your body just go with it. It was a lot of fun. That was it really got the sense of like, oh, this is how you fight, you know. This is like not spar, like you just, where you could flip this switch and all of a sudden you were just sort of this stumbling drunk, and it was it's totally unpredictable. So it's like really hard to read what you're doing. So, you know, the line that stuck with me was, you can't know what I'm doing if I don't know what I'm doing. Right. So if I have no idea what I'm going to do, that there's no way to predict what that is. And so it had a similar spontaneity to Bagua in that sense, but the movements were more like, you know, they were easier and sort of clumsier.
And loose. I get the sensation of those loose whipping strikes that he likes to do sometimes.
Right.
Your whole body's just whipping along.
The thing you see, I mean, I think it's out there still, that black and white video of him from Denver where he's doing some of, like, he does some monkey and he does some other things.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. And he mentions monkey in here as well.
And he does that's where, you know, he does the white crane stuff. You know, we saw that, we got that from one of his old students in Denver, and, you know, that,
right.
you really see that sort of liquidy kind of flappy thing going on. So I think that was a part of that was from the drunken training. But
like they both have that similar.
I mean, I think that's the, you know, he talks about the internal external stuff that he learned from Hung Yishang, right? And that he, you know, the Tang Shu Dao, you know, when he first came back.
Is that what
they
called internal Shaolin at one? Yeah, didn't they call it internal Shaolin originally?
Yeah. So he used to teach what he called like internal Kung Fu or something like that, which was, you know, the early days where it was more just, you know, here, you know, fighting techniques. And, you know, I think that's, you know, there were like a few people that he taught that to, and, you know,
and now it's more like the official Xing Yi and Bagua and Tai Chi are the main course.
Yeah.
In the past, he has taught a little bit.
Spontaneous motion, things just start happening.
Totally.
It's wild, you know. It happened twice. It was like, whoa, that's not something I do. Like,
you're just rolling back. Nice.
Yeah, falling backwards, doing a backwards somersault, and then coming back up on my feet. It was like, whoa, cool. And, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of that stuff where you get this, it's the folding, right? So the key thing in that stuff is the idea that you have this ability, like basically all your joints have the ability to sort of fold in on themselves as well as go out. And that's where that thing of, you know, we're starting with the break falls or the it's like you're something hits your body, you collapse into it, and then you spring off of it. So a lot of it is very similar to, you know, when you do the, like the Jibengong stuff from the Gao style, and you do those kind of whippy, like body wave motions. It's like that's, you know, and you get that kind of little bit of a wave through your.
You're shifting your weight and you're whipping your arms, kind of, and you get a.
Yeah, and you get a sort of wave through your spine and through your torso, and but it's that, but without any, you know, there's, like I said, there's very little form to it, so it's just kind of takes you wherever you want it to, and then you, if you start going in a direction, you just fall into that direction, you know, it's fun.
One of the drills we did one time is where you lay on the ground and you roll like a barrel, barrel roll. I don't know the name for that, but yeah. you roll sideways across the floor.
Yes, that was a big part. So what we would do is it was a basketball court. So you'd roll one way, roll back, and you were tucked in like you were wrapped inside a carpet or something. And the idea was to make sure that nothing was sticking out, like your elbows or your knees, because if there was something was sticking out when you roll over, you bang that thing. And so you roll one way, roll back, and then get up, you know, so you'd be super dizzy, get up, and then you'd have to start moving around. And so it was this thing to kind of mimic what it was like, I think, to be a little bit intoxicated, where you know, you stir up some kind of internal thing and then try to move from there.
Does it mimic your drunkenness by rolling around?
Yeah, it's that unstable stableness.
There's another thing here. He says that when upright, they often appear to have no body solidity at all. They look totally vulnerable and wide open. And yet when their opponent seeks to take advantage, he finds himself throttled without knowing why or how.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
That's yeah, good description.
So it's hard to sort of really flowing with everything.
And things come at weird angles because it's like, you know, it's sort of like hitting one of those, he would always talk about those old punching bag things. I forget what they're called, Weeble Wobbles or something. Like you hit it and it would bounce back up and kind of wobble, right? Because it was like a big balloon with a weight at the bottom.
Right.
And that kind of, you know, just Weeble Wobble and back and forth. There was like Weebles Wobble, but they don't fall down. I don't know the reference, but that's what he used to say.
It's an old toy. Yeah.
It's an old toy. And right. And I think the idea is that your feet are like heavy and sort of rooted, but everything is kind of wobbling in between your head and your feet. And,
He says here that in some ways, I would say Eight Drunken Immortals took the flexibility, falling skills, and special ability to move in all directions of monkey boxing to the next step. However, it substituted playfulness and a sense of good camaraderie for monkey's viciousness. So it sounds like monkey has a little more edge to it, maybe, and
right,
drunken is a little, you know, more forgiving.
That animal versus human versus spiritual thing he talks about in there, about, you know, when you embody an animal nature, it's kind of just, you know, and you know, like the bigger, faster animal wins. The Eight Drunken Immortals had this thing of, you know, it wasn't the compassion quite of Tai Chi, where, you know, but it did have this thing of, like, one of them was, you know, as the guy would punch, you'd let it in and you wrap your arms around him and give him a big hug as you bent his spine in half and slammed your body weight on top of him. but the technique was like, basically, come here, let me give you a hug, you know. And it was just
He says a lot more about Eight Drunken Immortals in here. But at the end, he says that the chi work of drunken boxers makes their bodies become very light or heavy, gradually or instantaneously. So that maybe has something to do with that lifting high up over your head and then boom, dropping straight down.
On
an energy level.
I think the only modern thing I could, you know, that people might have a frame of reference to is the Sistema stuff. They do some of it.
Okay.
So they have a little bit of that sort of loose floppy thing going on. I think that all kind of comes from that same source of some, you know, old school, you know, who knows what boxer type of thing, where what they would call a drunken boxer, or, you know, a dog boxer, you know, these different kinds of, like, you know, drunken boxers were loose and floppy, dog boxers were low to the ground, and, you know, bird, you know, was jumping around and flapping, you know, they had these more animal kind of, you know, but they weren't specific styles. It was more
old-fashioned, ancient thinking. Okay, so just to finish off, Eight Drunken Immortals includes a full range of chi techniques developed in both separate chi exercises and form movements. In the beginning, a drunken boxer deliberately seeks to draw universal divine energy into the body from the heavens. That's pretty cool. You know, he's like, there's no acting involved. You're really supposed to feel the energy pouring down into you, into the three dantians of the body, and move it between the three like a living force. And next, from each of the dantians to anywhere in the body for specific effects. So, I mean, that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, we never got that far with it, but what we did work on was moving your center of gravity up and down your body, which is kind of an interesting that you know, you can change the where your fulcrum is inside your torso, and that gives you like a different kind of. That's how you make that wave. So, yeah, that's a fun one.
Moving forward to chapter 4, opening the energy gates of the body. What are the energy gates? The energy gates are major energy relay stations of the body where the strength of the life current, chi, moving through the system is regulated. Many gates are located at joints, or more precisely, the actual space between the bones of the joint. So those are the areas you want to dissolve and clear out blockages as you begin your training.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. So that's, we're moving, that's the energy gates.
Right. So now you move into the, what I refer to as the faith part of this thing where, cause when I first started, you know, he's talking about energy gates and life forces. I didn't know if I believed in any of that stuff. I was like, all right, sure. And so for me, it was like about, I can feel the space in between my joints, or, you know, I can, that's a thing I can kind of relate to. And then what you notice is that there are recurring sensations, right, in certain places. Mm. And you know, as you get more refined, those places start to become like little shapes. You know, and so your body is made up of all these little shapes. And then within these little shapes, you start noticing, to me, what felt like little light bulbs, right? You have like little Christmas tree bulbs inside of these things. So when you smack your hand on the, you know, table or chair by accident and it starts throbbing, you know, if you feel it, you'll start to notice there's a throb in certain places, you know, and that's sort of the, you know, you definitely can feel it when it hurts, you know, but you right. can also,
that's the
but
most.
You can also gently kind of rub your, you know, like lightly run your finger on it or tap your, you know, finger on it. That was always the way we do it in the class, and sort of tap, you know, on a spot, and it would wake it up to the point that something was happening in there, whether it was blood flow or whatever. And, you know, at some point you say, okay, well, the way I'm going to describe these feelings is I'm going to call them energy aids, right? Because they, I need a map. I need a road map, and I need a way to describe the things on the road. Right. So, you know, it's like energy gates are like checkpoints, you know, that these lines of, you know, life force energy move through. I'm sure if you know, did stuff with with those, you know, nerve stuff and, you know, scanning the body, you'd see some correlation to that, because you know, the felt sensation of your nerves to where your chi is moving is fairly similar, right? So a lot of people, when they first start to try to feel chi, what they're feeling is the nerves sort of, you know, firing, and that as they become aware of that, there starts to be a sense of heat, blood flow, all this stuff. And again, these gates are just little markers along the way, and you sort of feel these spots, you know, more than right. you, more that, you know, they have a little bit brighter light in them than just the blank parts in between.
So that speaks to what he says here. The gates should not be conceived of as simple anatomical locations. They must be felt with the mind, for they are part of your subtle energy body. So that's that sense of, you know, this isn't something you necessarily use calipers or a ruler to find each one. Maybe like acupuncture points have very specific spots. These energy gates are where you feel the energy flowing through the checkpoint more so than exactly some pinpoint location.
Yeah, well, and it's...
Some of the energy gates are the same as acupuncture points.
Yeah, so it's like... So the you know, where the point is sort of on a, you know, two-dimensional or, you know, even a three-dimensional model doesn't actually mimic, because, you know, if the whole, you know, quote-unquote energy body is expanding and contracting and shifting and moving around, there's going to be little differences in where these things are. You know, I don't know if that really is that most important thing in the beginning as much as they give you a general idea of places to focus, right? Because what happens when you're trying to stand is you get distracted. And it's one of the reasons why having a group of people, or, you know, especially if you have a group of people where somebody's leading it, you know, we call those teachers, that you have somebody just guiding you, you know, do your head, do your nose, do your blah, 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 you know, and that keeps your mind sort of on this track, you know. And it's one of the reasons why I find it, you know, it's always been easier to do it in groups. I mean, because you just kind of pick up on the energy of the other people too. And but
that's what's been nice about the ones that you were, the leading practices you were doing, where they were dissolving organs and standing, where, you know, you just have someone calling it out, leading you through it. They don't have to explain everything under the sun. They just, hey, dissolve this point, dissolve that point. And it saves you the trouble of having to return yourself there over and over. And, you know, no matter how long you train, there's always usefulness in that.
Yeah. I mean, you could even just record yourself reading the things off, you know, a checklist, and that would be something, you know, because it's just that idea that your mind, you know, your conscious mind doesn't have to be thinking about what comes next. You know, it's a bit like with, if you're doing Qigong, trying to move in a simple movement, it's easier to focus on, you know, what's happening inside. If you're trying to do something that's, you know, like a whole Tai Chi form, it, you know, it gets a bit more difficult because the physical motions are taking up a big part of what your mind is thinking about, you know. And so the more of your attention you can focus on one thing, it's just, you know, makes it easier.
You must learn to feel these points in order to channel the flow of your chi, to stimulate the subtle body to the greatest extent possible. The object is not merely to visualize the gate, but to feel the gate precisely, so you can learn to increase or decrease the amount of power flowing through the gate, using your will with the same amount of ease with which you can now open or shut your eyes, mouth, or hands. So it's a very mechanical, straightforward action you're taking, not necessarily something amorphous and sort of in your mind.
Yeah, I mean, that's where, again, at first it's just, okay, I got to build, you know, have some faith that this thing exists.
Yeah.
And until you can actually feel it, and then you go, all right, well, there it is. And I, you know, I think the best analogy I can give is if you don't know anything about music and you listen to music, you listen and you just hear the general sound of the music, but you don't know if it's a C chord or an A chord or an E chord, right? And you definitely don't know if it's a seventh or a, you know, minor chord or any of that stuff. You just hear it as music. Where if you understand the structure of music, you're going to hear that same thing in a very different way. And it's the same kind of thing. I mean, the example I always give is, think about an orchestra. If you listen to 100 people playing, how many people can you hear, right? How many individual people can you point out and say, that guy's playing this? And then how many of those people can you tell if they're making a mistake? Because if you can hear the one guy in the 100 that's making a mistake, that's the kind of level of attention, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, that you have to have inside your body. So the first big thing is to get the sense of, you know, your senses going out, right? Your feeling, your hearing, your eyes, everything, all of that. And you try to get that to go in. So the sense of feeling the inside of your body becomes as tangible as what you see in front of you. So you don't see something in front of you and question whether or not it's there or that it's real, right? You look at it, you see a light bulb, you go, that's a light bulb, right? And you don't question yourself. I mean, well, I hope not. You don't question whether or not that's a light bulb. And part of what you have to start getting inside your body is, okay, I feel this thing. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm not going to question that it exists. I'm going to accept that it exists and, you know, work at trying to feel it.
Now, one of the other things he brings up is that, you know, since this is your energy body, if you're feeling low, your energy gates are going to sort of shrink in size. If you're feeling all good today, then your energy gates are going to be palpably stronger and feel larger geographically inside your body. So that's every day your energy gates are going to fluctuate in size and shape in a way that your physical body much less so.
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't necessarily go that direction. I mean, it could go the other way too, right? You get really pissed off and your energy gets real fucking big, you know. No one's gonna want to be around it, but you know, it's gonna take up a lot of space. You can also get real happy and just want to be totally introverted and pull into yourself, you know. So but yes, I mean, it's about having these you know, experiences, you know. That's the Taoist part about it. It's like, you know, you stand, you feel stuff, you know, and that's it. Like, and the same way, it's the classic description is like, it's like the weather, right? You can stand in one place and the weather will change, you know, and it'll be sunny sometimes and warm, and other times it'll be crappy and cold and everything in between. And that doesn't change, you know, much. So that's kind of how you look at your feeling in your body. Is it's like some days it's like, this does not feel good, but you do it anyway. And other days it's like, oh, this feels great, and you still do it, you know. And that's the piece about, you know, the pleasure and the pain are both things that you dissolve, right?
Yeah, it's like, definitely. So just to wrap up this section, he brings up the idea that the key point in the process of experiencing and dissolving these energy gates, you always travel down the body during the releasing, dissolving process at first. So that seems to be the overriding next instruction, is as you explore the gates in general, you're going to go from top to bottom.
Well, that's a safety precaution, that the stuff you do where you're not going down, you need to have a really good base foundation in terms of how to deal with it before you start doing that on your own. Right. So that's the kind of thing you do with a teacher a whole bunch. So you learn how to, the way I always describe it is, you know, it's like how to put out the fire, right? Once you know how to use the fire extinguisher and the hot fire hose, and in some of cases call the fire department, you don't want to like start doing those things, right? And once you have that piece, then you can start kind of delving into it, because you'll have a way out if things get hairy. But you don't want, if you don't have a way out, a way to down, a way to ground yourself, it's not, you know, it's just like not worth the risk.
So that downward sensation of energy constantly dripping, sinking downward, that gives you this grounding that allows you to do maybe more out there type practices, but you have this sort of grounding down through your legs, through your feet, into the ground. Right. So you'll always have some protection, maybe, or just a solid base.
I mean, I've seen it a few times where people do things and they bring up a lot of energy, and you know, it takes them several hours to come back down, you know, and it's like, that's not great. You want to, you know, so part of it is being able to at the end of your practice, bring everything into you and settle it, you know, the same way you would if you did, you know, if you were doing Shingi or Bagua, that, you know, at the end of your thing, you do some circles with your arms to store everything in your belly. Or, you know, if you're doing Tai Chi, you do the closing movement is about bringing everything into your belly and, you know, quieting it all down so that it's like it doesn't agitate your system.
Right. And that brings up the whole thing both of us have seen happen before in big groups of people dissolving, where suddenly you'll hear a crash off in the distance and jump out and look over, and sure enough, somebody dissolved and fell down because they weren't, you know, they started dissolving down into their legs, but their mind wasn't present, and they were sort of over exerting their energy system. And so they sort of like lost their balance and tipped over.
Yeah.
That downward flow helps prevent that.
Yeah. And it's that feeling of, I think, where, you know, it's a bit like dropping in an elevator or something. You kind of get a wobbly sometimes if it goes too fast. That's sort of what happens. It's kind of like getting seasick, I guess, maybe, where you have this internal sense of you just don't feel right, and then you just kind of get dizzy and boom, you know. I've seen it, you know, happen. Might happen to some guy in my first class. You know, I was like, whoa, that's a trip.
That's crazy. Yeah.
But it's also, you know, can manifest in much more subtle ways, and it could just be that after you finish practicing, you just feel agitated and like not settled and kind of like, you know, easily, you know, annoyed or whatever. And so part of it is to just kind of make sure that because you're in a sense, like you can think of it as an antenna, right? You've turned up your antenna to start to feel things. Right, to really get sensitive about stuff. And you don't necessarily want to have your antenna up all the way when you go out into the world, right? You want to modulate that thing, bring it down a little bit so that everybody around you is not, you know, freaking out your little feelers, you know.
Well, that feels like a good place to end for now.
All right, great.
Hey, it's Isaac again. Just a reminder to like and subscribe. Also, check out our website, www.watertradition.com. There's some free Zoom classes going on Sundays on standing that, you know, relates to the stuff we've been talking about in the book, as well as classes on Shingi and other things going on. So check it out. All right, take care.